This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shanning and Julian. Now, a couple of days ago, Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad mentioned that the government will revive the Malaysia Incorporated policy. So Malaysia Inc. was a policy introduced in the 1980s under Tun Dr. Mahathir's first administration, and it was meant to encourage cooperation and partnership between organisations in the public as well as private spheres. So it's based on the idea that Malaysia Inc. would be a business entity jointly owned by those in the public and private sectors. So the question is, though, what might a revival of Malaysia Inc. policies mean for us today? And for more on this, we speak to Lawrence Todd, director at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. Thank you for joining us this morning, Lawrence. Good morning. So was the Malaysia Inc. policy of the 1980s and 1990s effective, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's important not to try to avoid sort of too broad generalizations. I think it covers a very important period of change in Malaysia's economy. It was a period characterized by high levels of part privatizations and corporatizations, but also of a high degree of openness to foreign investment. It was a period of some of the highest growth Malaysia's seen, a consolidation of the shift from agriculture and a resource-based economy into manufacturing and export-driven. And I think during that time, we saw, for some years in the 90s, for example, Malaysia's financial markets was among the most dynamic in all of Asia because of the new listings that were coming out of the privatization process. But on the other hand, I think as a policy, it's really left us with this huge legacy that's best encapsulated in sort of the universe of government-linked companies that we now see across the Malaysian economy. And I think it's important not to tar all of those GLCs with the same brush by any means, because there are whole swathes of important differences. But in general, I think those do create quite a few problems and challenges in different industries to different degrees as a result of the kind of continuing high levels of government ownership and the kind of continuingly high government footprint in the economy. So, it was a period of great change, which led to sort of high periods of growth, creation of new jobs and so on. I think now, and it's important to recognize that no policy is perfect, and looking back with the benefit of hindsight, it's easy to see the flaws. But I think now the important question is, okay, how do we deal with the legacy, and how do we sort of unwind the high levels of government ownership where we think that's the problem?
I think the other problem also, apart from the fact that there are certain sectors in which the government has fared very poorly, for example, Malaysia Airlines is one of those examples. But the other point is that there are fears of corruption and cronyism, which were very big themes in the 1990s. And also the Pakatan Harapan government has also promised that there wouldn't be no political appointee. So how does this Malaysian Inc. policy square with all those ideas and concerns?
Well, look, I think that's a very good point. I think it's crucial that if we're going to embark on this discussion again, that we absolutely learn the lessons of the first time round, which, as you say, included recognizing that we need to have a very clear and transparent process for corporatization and privatization, and we need to be very clear about what policy goals are and how it's going to be regulated to ensure that we don't see the sort of capture by cronies or just small corners of the corporate sector in terms of the release of these public assets, because that doesn't help at all in terms of what the end goal should really be, which is how do we create, across the Malaysian economy, competitive and innovative market that will create opportunities for entrepreneurs and lower prices and increased choice for consumers. That should be the end goal, not to enrich certain particular parts of the society or to kind of maintain government control to too high a degree in any one sector, unless that's kind of strictly necessary. So I think it's about having a very clear framework and a very clear policy, and then applying that kind of transparently and fairly. And I think it's a little bit worrying that some of the discussion we've had since the election on divestment doesn't seem to have been that clear. We've had, are we going to sell Plus? Aren't we going to sell Plus? And a seeming difference potentially between the cabinet and Khazanah about what is ready for privatization, what is not. Of course, as you mentioned, the conversation with MAST is ongoing. So I think what we need now is to sort of take a breath and have a very clear and transparent discussion about, okay, across the Malaysian economy, how do we want to map out a roadmap to a well-regulated, fair, competitive market? And in so doing, identifying where we maybe don't need to have high government ownership still, and then what's a fair and transparent way to reduce that government ownership in a way that doesn't lead to some of the risks that you described, which are ultimately cronyism, even corruption. So I think that's the way we need to structure this conversation. And I think at the moment it does seem a little bit being driven by discussions around individual assets, such as Plus, such as MAP. And I think we need to move to a broader kind of policy level discussion in order to make sure we capture all those risks.
And Lawrence, doesn't Malaysian Inc. policy then also create further problems, which we still have today, one of which is that these privatised companies still have to balance their social obligations versus maximising value to shareholders, especially for the listed companies, or even those that have bondholders?
Yeah, look, I think it's kind of complicated. I think, if the objectives, the sort of social objectives, are clearly defined and hardwired into regulation, look, for me, that isn't too much of a problem. So, for example, if you look at POS Malaysia, so they have a very clear universal servant service license, which means, look, if you want to run the post office, you have to accept the responsibility to provide a basic service of letter delivery to every household in Malaysia or something to that effect, right? And that's written into the Act. So that when it was privatised, it was very clear what the responsibilities were going to be.
But the time has changed for that company also, right? Because people post much fewer letters nowadays. So, but then they're still stuck with that Act.
Well, indeed. So the question then becomes, so there's two issues, right? So the first is, how do you write that regulation so that it's not linked to a specific point in time? Like, how do you have it create specific enough responsibilities on the companies that you're, on the services you're privatizing, but also creates room for those companies to innovate and change with the time. So that's problem number one. But in a way, at least if we're having a discussion about what's written in the rules about what the company has to do, it's at least a transparent discussion. For me, the bigger problem is when you have government influence and ownership, and that creates this kind of unspecified responsibilities and this kind of understood political goals, but it's not really clear. It's not written down anywhere exactly what they're meant to do, but there's just a level of pressure and influence and coordination between the government and certain private sector entities. I think for me, that's much more problematic because it's not transparent and it sort of distorts the way the market's meant to operate. At least, for someone who wants to run POS Malaysia, it's written in the rules what you need to do.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. And that was Lawrence Todd of Ideas speaking about the potential revival of the Malaysia Inc. policy. And I think as he puts it, it's quite a fine line to draw, right? Because on the one hand, you want the transparency of having everything written down and no understandings happening. But on the other hand, you run the risk of, I guess, overregulation, perhaps.
And also, are you giving a carte blanche to the government to do whatever it likes? Because I think there is some value in the government acting because of its clout to drive the economy forward. We've seen that in China Inc., Singapore Inc., and perhaps US Inc., right? The entire Republican Party is US Inc., maybe, perhaps.
But right? You don't want to crowd out private businesses,
how do you
right?
do it in the correct way in Malaysia?
I think that is the question. And we'll have to wait and see if we get more details about this potential revival of Malaysia Inc. But right now, we're also taking a look at another story this morning about MAVCOM. Because if you recall, late last year, the United States Federal Aviation Administration downgraded the safety ratings of Malaysian carriers and airports from categories 1 to 2. And they made the downgrade after finding that the Malaysian Civil Aviation Authority, or CAM, was unable to meet safety standards of the ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization. So in a press conference yesterday, MAVCOM have explained some of the implications of this decision, including that Malaysian airlines are banned from creating new routes or expanding existing ones in the US.
And aviation players could also lose up to 4 billion ringgit due to the indirect impact of the downgrade. This is if the FAA's decision triggers other civil aviation authorities to perform similar reviews.
So for example, in 2015, China's South Korea and Japan stopped Thai-based airlines from flying charters and new routes because of the safety concerns raised by the International Civil Aviation Organization in 2015, which was followed by an FAA downgrade. Now, China, South Korea and Japan make up nearly 9% of seat capacity for all Malaysian carriers. Now, for now, the FAA downgrade will directly cost Malaysian carriers 360 million ringgit and cost airport operators 10.8 million ringgit due to revenue loss from the US market.
But MAVCOM Executive Chairman Dr. Nungsari Ahmad Radi did say that the downgrade would have a minimal direct impact on passenger growth and Malaysian carriers' profitability in the foreseeable future, given the low volume of passengers between the US and Malaysia.
I think if you look at Thailand, which is a major tourism country, Thailand also has not regained its Category 1 rating since its downgrade in 2015. And the Philippines actually took 6 years to restore Category 1 rating after its own downgrade. But we see that Thailand is actually a very robust tourist country, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a destination of choice for many people in terms of coming to Asia, right, for holidays. But I want to know, what is the government's response? Because so far, I mean, we did see Transport Minister Anthony Lok saying that he's formed a task force to regain CAM's Category 1 ranking from FAA. Now, they aim to resolve all 33 issues raised within 12 months. Well, good luck to them, because 12 months is quite an ambitious target. And in December, the Ministry of Transport also announced that it would merge MAVCOM with CAM, although how this will work out and whether it will help CAM regain its Category 1 status, I'm not certain, because one, CAM looked after the technical aspects of the airport, whilst MAVCOM was in terms of the commercial aspects, right?
Absolutely. So a lot of questions still remaining on that front as well. But right now, we're about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, we'll be having the breakfast grill, where Noel Lim speaks with David Kwaman, author of Spillover: Animal Infections and the Next Human Pandemic, about the COVID-2019 coronavirus outbreak. Stay tuned for that after the news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.